is the Reflector Reflections podcast. My name is Annie. Join me as we journey around the world, talking with fellow human design enthusiasts, specifically reflectors, as they experiment and navigate their unique design. Today's beautiful conversation is with Christine Spicer, a 6-2 reflector with the cross of endeavor. Christine comes to us from New Zealand. She's a coach, mentor, and facilitator, as well as the founder of Human Design New Zealand. She's a certified analyst and teacher in design and has been in design for quite some time. Welcome, Christine.
Yeah, thanks for having me here, Annie. I'm excited to see what happens as we, just talk together and air this whole journey that is the Reflector journey.
Yeah, and I'm really excited to have you here because we don't get the opportunity to, well, we do. We get the opportunity to speak with people who've been in design or have experienced design for, you know, an extended period of time. But we also don't, well, I don't get to have the honor of speaking with someone who's gone through that whole gamut of official study. So I'm quite honored to have you here and sharing your wisdom as a sixth line. But before we get started on that, may I ask you, may I take us back to how you found human design or human design found you?
Sure. Yes. I was super lucky to stumble across human design. It was actually 2005 at this time of year. It was at the end of August. And gee, the world looked like a different place in 2005. And so I was visiting a friend of mine in Germany, and we'd known each other since we were 16 years old. And so it was very special to find that she was studying to be a human design analyst. And she's a manifester. And so we sat out under the stars. We went up on the top of a hill and we had a fire and we had all the kids there and we sat looking at the stars, you know, having an amazing conversation, catching up. And then we went back and it was late at night and she said, "I've got this thing I want to show you." And normally I would be, well, it's kind of 11 o'clock, I'm ready to go to bed. But there was something inside of me that said, "No, stay." And she popped in all the charts of my children and my then husband to this strange software system and started telling me about them. And I was super fascinated because I worked in people development, I worked in profiling, in human resources. And so I knew a lot about all these different psychometric testing systems. I was a bit of an expert and all of that. But she started telling me about my kids, particularly in a way which I was like, what is this? And then she put my chart in and she screamed. I thought, what's wrong with me?
Yeah.
And, and then she started to describe what a reflector is. And honestly, it just met me in such a deep way. It really spoke deeply to all of the strange things that I could not put together about myself, even though I could put a lot together about other people. And so I was hooked, and she gave me all sorts of information to take away with me. And I listened to Ra Uruhu as we were traveling around Europe. And then I came back to New Zealand very excited, thinking, good, I'll be able to find some human design professionals in New Zealand. And of course, I had a really good search and there were none. And so here I was with this thing which I felt could be really life-changing for me. And yet there was no way of finding anyone here to help me. And so I started studying through the International Human Design School. And that was actually the best thing that could have ever happened to me. I mean, listeners might be thinking, well, why didn't you just go on social media and see what they were saying on there? But it's important to remember that in 2005, there was no social media. It was a world where you didn't really have a choice if you wanted to study. And so, yeah, I ended up studying, and I really wanted to work out, how does this system work? And It was quite a journey because there was a lot of information about the other types available. I mean, you think back to 2005, it's a long time ago. And there was a lot of information about the other types, but the information on reflectors was very slim. And people might be saying, well, it's pretty slim now. Well, I tell you what, it was a lot slimmer then. And so all the way through my training, I had to learn to experiment. So it was really the best thing that ever happened to me. So even though at the time I was super disappointed, I was really frustrated, I was angry that I'd had this possibility sitting there and yet no one could really tell me. I learned the whole system, and as I learned the system, I learned how to work with the moon, and I learned human design really as a reflector from the moon. And eventually I found some other more experienced reflectors, some reflector teachers. I found Dharmen, I found Nisarg, but I'd already been in my experiment for a long time before I found them, and they really added a lot to me. But that initial experiment was so precious. I look back and I realize that was so precious for me, because I could have been completely thrown off track if I'd been having that experience now. And then going on social media to find my answers, I would have been so confused, because there is so much that is absolutely off base out there in the social media world. And it would have taken me into my intellect, it would have taken me into my mind, and actually where I went was into my body, and that's the best place for a
Wow.
reflector.
I have so many questions, but let me kind of calm my mind. The first one I think I want to ask is one, well, I just want to say that's a huge dedication as well, because 2005, I think we were even just still getting cable. Like we stood have, some of it would have still been on dial up, you know. But also the time zones, you would have had to been getting up extremely early to do those sessions. But in that experiment, may I ask you, and you were saying, you know, you had to be in your own experiment, did you still find that it was challenging to not be conditioned by what the limited information was on reflectors, or what even as you were doing this study to be kind of taken along going, no, that's not right? Or were you allowed, were you heard in your cohort of study?
Yeah, they were asking me all the time. So they would get to the reflector, they'd talk about the other types, and then they would get to the reflector and they would share what they knew about reflectors. And then they'd say, well, Christine, you're experimenting with this, so what do you think of this? And the teachers at the time were amazing, in really mentoring me, but not from the perspective that they were telling me what to do, but from the perspective of wanting to know what my experience was. So I think I was really lucky, from that perspective, because nothing was shoved down my throat.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I love what you said there about the social media. And I mean, I know not all social media is bad, but it can be very debilitating. You know, it can be very much, well, I don't know what, and I trust this person because they're a big name. This is what it is for me. And I've always been a person that feels language matters. So sometimes their intention's good, but it just is like, ew. Taking that journey that you've been on through the body and experiencing this, and then coming and, you know, or have you avoided social media? That could be the first question. But coming into social media and seeing this, how has that felt for you in this space?
Well, being honest, it feels really icky. Social media is not a great place for me. I don't spend much time on there. I'm very choiceful about what I do there, and you can tell by just looking at my Instagram or something. I think I've done six posts on Instagram. I'm a little bit more on Facebook because I learned that a long time ago. But yeah, I do find I pay a lot of attention to how I feel when I'm in places and spaces, and so social media is no different. And so when I go onto social media, I notice what happens in my body and being. And I often will come away feeling kind of disappointed Well, that's not me then. That is not. It's not good for me. Sometimes I come away feeling uplifted. I'm not saying that everything on social media is bad at all, but I am saying that energetically there is a connection. However good the content is on social media, there is also an energetic connection to so much that is not. And that is a web. And so I'm careful with my aura.
I love that. Thank you. In this experiment of Christine, I guess in a way, finding Christine, I like to, for me especially, and I found it through a lot of reflectors I've spoken to, it is like a journey going backwards. So we do, with any form of therapy, with any form of something meets us and greets us that we can see ourselves, it's this journey we take kind of back through our childhood, through our youth, and everything of just going, oh. If I had have known this, it's not a should, but it's just this taking that healing paintbrush back and going, it's okay. Would you mind taking us back to little Christine and your upbringing?
Little Christine, I feel like I was very fortunate. I grew up, my early years were in the South Island of a small town in the South Island of New Zealand. And in a family of generators, some of them were emotional, some of them were sacral, but they were all generators. And of course, I was different. And I had that whole experience in my growing up, which I'm sure all reflectors have had, of feeling like, well, I'm just the same as them. And I'm completely different. And this movement backwards and forwards between, well, I'm just the same as them because I can turn up like them and I can be a better version of them. And I am completely different. Hang on, what's happening here? And so at least though, being the same as them was a satisfying experience. It was a loving experience. It was a pretty secure experience and in a beautiful place. So I feel like if I was going to, if I did choose my family or my parents, I feel like I did a reasonable job of it. And I remember that moment when we moved from the South Island to the North Island. And I remember this inner feeling of stunnedness of, hang on, what's just happened to me? I was maybe 12 years old, 11, 12 years old, something like that, maybe 11. And the difference, because if anybody knows much about New Zealand, the South Island and the North Island are completely different. They're like different countries, really. And we went to the north of the North Island. And I just, how would I describe it? I just turned up as a different being. I felt like in the South Island, and this is the adult looking back, it was probably not the thoughts of the child, but it's the adult languaging what I was trying and struggling to understand at the time. The child was in the South Island. I felt like everything, I was somehow grounded and I was like the bones of the earth. And there's big mountains, there's big mountain ranges in the South. And there was something very solid in that. And then we moved up into the north of the north, which is a bit subtropical. And I felt like I was the skin and the flesh of, of a body, which was a completely different experience, a much different and very much more sensual experience up in the north, but a much more kind of grounded and sturdy experience in the south. And all I'd done is just move locations, it's just, I'm sure other reflectors have had these experiences in different places, and I certainly went on to have more. But yeah, that was quite a change for me, and I experienced myself very differently in those two different places.
You obviously you live in the North Island now, don't you? You still live in Auckland. Have you gone, obviously you have gone back. Do you still find that feeling of that bones and the grounding when you go back?
Yeah, it's still there.
It's still there.
It's still
That'd be
there.
beautiful to be able to.
It is still there. But now I live actually on an island. I don't live in Auckland. I know it's the Auckland region, but actually I've moved out onto an island which is in the Hauraki Gulf. Small island, small community, and very, a lot of nature and a lot of water. So it's more reminiscent of the place in the north where I spent my adolescence in a way. Yeah.
Was that a choice for you, just honoring your environment and needing to sort of create more spaciousness for yourself?
Yeah, definitely. I needed to get out of Auckland. I did live in Auckland for, I've lived in Auckland on and off in my life. And I came to a point where I really had to get out of the suffocation of the city and the energetics of the frequencies in the city and all the EMF and everything. I'm really sensitive to all of that. And I just couldn't sleep. So I had to get out. Yeah.
Have you found that that's become more profound for you as you've journeyed through discovering human design? Obviously, yourself, that sensitivity, the digestion, and I mean physical digestion, as in,
Absolutely.
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as I have become more and more, we're always deconditioning. I mean, it doesn't stop, but as I've moved through nearly 7 year cycles now of deconditioning, I have become much more attuned to the frequencies that are for me, which means I've become even more attuned to the frequencies that are not for me, and that's a wonderful navigation tool. So we can either look at it as, well, how annoying because now I'm really sensitive, or we can look at it as, well, how helpful because now I'm really sensitive, and that's the way I look at it.
Yeah, me too. It's very much, you don't have to really second guess those cues because the body keeps score. I know that's a book,
Absolutely.
but
Yeah.
it does.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I want to ask you as well, if you don't mind sharing, that journey of learning in that first 7 years. We've got this big influx of people, the 2020s, we call them, when COVID hit, everyone went down. Everyone, that's what human design kind of had another little boom. And I've spoken with some other people who've been in the human design space for considerable years, and there was another boom. I think it was in the 90s, a little boom. So then we've had another one as well. Our deconditioning process, because we have so much social media and so much content, and we have so much content that's not source material. Can you share with me your first 7 years, from the lens of how you kind of started to navigate through your own cycle, what you experienced? And just if I may share my experience in my first 7 years, is it's still like I kind of thought I knew everything, and then I realized I knew nothing. And then I'm coming in and out, I'm coming in and out. And then even in that fourth year of just going, to hell with this. This is, I'm done with this stuff, So it's been this real journey for me, and I can only imagine how much different it would have been for you.
Yeah, I mean it was because for a long time I just intuitively I could sense and feel it, and I also couldn't quite work it out, and I couldn't embody it, and it took me a long time. So at the beginning I've always been a writer, I've written a lot, and I was so fortunate that I had a lot of kind of diaries. I guess intuitively for many years I've been trying to work out why I changed so much, and I'm very happy that I used to write the date. And so at the beginning I did a lot of retrospective. I actually looked back at some peak experiences that I'd had, as in peak or low peaks experiences that I'd had, and I kind of track. I looked at, oh, so what was happening there? Where was the moon? What were the other planets doing? And then with that in my awareness, I started to move forward. And I've never been a I'm not a detailed person. I have no line ones in my design, so it doesn't work for me to try to do something like set up a spreadsheet or look at the moon every day, or know all the, I'm just not into that kind of detail. So what I've always done is I've always looked at what's happening from the perspective of if there was a change in me that I noticed, then I would somehow capture and record that change in me. And it could be a change in emotion, it could be a change in energy, it could be a change in thought, any of that substantial change I'm talking about. And once I'd recorded that in some way, then I would have a look and see, oh yeah, where's the moon? And for a long time, I couldn't really see any patterns. And over time, though, I built up, started to see patterns. And I'm a 48 line six, so patterns are, everything for me, really. And I started to get this sense of, ah, actually, I can see the way my behavior changes. I can see the way my psychology changes. I can see the way my emotional state changes. I can see the way my energy changes. And then I could see something start to emerge, which was really a passion of me. But that's a long process. That's not a, oh, let me do this for a few weeks and see whether this moon means something for me. This is something that I was doing as I was studying as well. So I had a also the appreciation of the knowledge that I could reference, if you like. Yeah, and that helped me find a pattern. So writing was a huge clue for me. And also allowing myself, I think I've always known that anything that I try to make myself do with regularity is probably not going to work. And so allowing myself to be changeable with how much I did that and really building patience, because I mean, this is the thing. Reflectors, and when I think about myself, when I found human design, I was so impatient. I was just so impatient. I wanted everything now, and I wanted to know who I was now. And I was kind of the I had some behaviors that were kind of aggressive as far as going after that for myself. I've tried so many different things, all sorts of things, everything from shamanic journeying to yoga to emotional drop through work to, I don't know, the list, the list of all the things, Qigong, and then all sorts of psychological approaches, and then all the profiling, which was my work, yeah, so I tried so many things. And yet, over time, the pattern really did start to build, and I did start to see how grateful I was for this lunar celestial body, which gave me such a deep appreciation of my life.
I love what you're saying there about patience, and that is a huge part of this rush world, isn't it? And depending on what, generation we're born in, some generations are more about, nope, you have to do this and this and this and this, and so we're kind of like ingrained in this, even though our parents meant well. But that I really do feel that it's like when I could stop, when I do try to just go, you're going to change and just accept it. And when I first, just me personally, when I first sort of like got to that point, I felt a little bit defeated. I felt like I had to sort of like surrender, raise my hand and go, oh, no choice. And it felt very deflating. But then I had to kind of like switch that language and go, well, it's actually liberating instead of deflating because it allows me this spaciousness to just go, what's going to happen tomorrow? There's a surprise, So I do feel that I'm still impatient. I still do want to know all the answers sometimes. I don't think that it goes away fully. Please tell me it does.
I think it does. I think it dissolves. I don't really have that anymore. I used to have always these questions, who am I? Who am I? Who am I? Who am I?
Yeah.
And all these different versions of who am I? And I don't have it anymore. I don't care who I am. Honestly, I don't care. It's just not important.
Because you know it's going to change.
Yeah,
And
it's the
you've got a
start.
completely open G like me. How has that been for you? Because for me, I've found that that's one of my most challenging, but also the most amazing things about me.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And same for me. I mean, on a practical level, I can get lost really easily. I don't know about you, but I'm just one of these people who I can know how to get to a place and then I can forget how to get to a place. I just sometimes I have this inner thing that just takes me somewhere, and sometimes I don't, and it's just so variable. And that could that was confusing in the past, but of course now I know. Oh yeah, well, of course it's going to be changeable. I think it's why I am so. I mean, we're all very sensitive to place reflectors, but it's also with a completely open G. I think that's what gives me this experience of amazing. The incredible surprise of the how different I can be at when I turn up, because there really is nothing of me in that, and that can be, I mean, in my life I had quite a lot of shocking experiences because of that. I mean, I think some of the most shocking, shattering experiences I had, particularly as a young person, were because of that just complete. What would I have? I need to just key back to what that felt like. It felt like a complete denial of my existence, I think, early on in some of those experiences where I still felt I thought I might have a particular identity. And then later, though, now in my life, it is, as you say, it is the most amazing entertainment, actually. I mean, it's very entertaining. It is what allows me to not be bored, because, and in a way, it's what my partner, who's a 3-5, I think that's one of the things he appreciates about me. He's actually managed to stick in a longer relationship than he's ever had, because he knows that just when he thinks he knows me, I'm going to be different, and it's going to be a surprise. It's like, what? And that is something that is, I guess, entertaining for him too. So
Oh, I
it's good
love
to have a
that.
sense of humor, I think, about it all. Yeah.
My partner, I sorry, I'm nearly crying laughing here,
Yeah.
trying not to be like, but he says the same thing. He said, life is never boring with you. And I went, see, this is why you needed me in your life, because he's pretty stoic.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm like up and down, you never know what you're gonna get. So I say, look, I'm here to entertain you.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know that there's that saying. Do you know the saying, variety is the spice of life? Do you know that saying? Well, when I was at university, a few people used to say, Spicer, which is my surname, is the variety of life.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one. Put that on my
And
tote bag.
of course, I didn't know that I was a reflector, but at university, what universities, I don't know if you know what university's like, but those kind of places where a whole lot of people are all thrown together, living in a student, I was living in a student hall, and of course there was all this literal variety. And so, wow, I got to be it. It was amazing.
Got to do it all. Have you found with that as well, have you people who have been a part of your life for an extended period of time, they do see you, they do know you. I don't have a huge, obviously my parents when they're alive, but I don't have too many, but I have a few, and they just get me. They just go, oh, she's doing this and she's doing that. But there's also when they say, Annie, if you stick with something, I know that's a keeper. Like if I stick with something for a long period of time, they always just say, that's a keeper for her. Do you have, obviously Human Design's one of those, but have you had those kind of friendships that they kind of know you?
Yeah, I do, and both. So I say yes, and so I do have friendships where they know me, and I still recognize that even though the one that they know has also something to do with them. And so I used to get a bit kind of annoyed about this, you know, that I used to get kind of really annoyed that there were certain people in my life who see me a certain way, and I know actually that's not really me. Some of it's even complimentary. You know, a friend of mine who has this amazing intellect. Oh wow, it's so amazing to, you know, be intellectually stimulated in conversation with this person. And she sees me as this person with amazing intellect. I know it's not me. It goes away when she leaves, but because of course she can't ever experience me without her, so she just thinks that's what I'm like, you know. Well, I've given up trying to explain that that's not me. And I just enjoy the in a way the fruits of that. But so yes, there's some things that I do. I guess there are things that are very nourishing for me in some way, and they stick around, you know. So yoga is one of them. I've been involved in yoga now for 20. Oh, yeah, probably about 25 years or something like that. And I just can't really imagine my life without yoga. That's one of those things. And there are, and you know, there's my family and there's a few friends that also have hold that role. And human design has persisted. But other things, I go through cycles. It's like I'll be really into it for a period and then I'm not. So I really think that this is something that is very true, that there are certain things that resonate on such a deep level that they are, they seem like they'll be there forever. Of course, we don't know.
And there's a lot of shame with that, I found, just in my journey as well as, I mean, all types and all people, but there's a fair bit of shame, it's embarrassment that, why can't I just stick to this thing? And I think that's a part of that, raising the white flag, so to speak, not surrendering in defeat, but surrendering in acceptance of just accepting that that's half the fun of the journey of life. But at the time when you're in it, it's like, oh, I know I did that.
Well, yes, and I think one of the good things that is has helped me since then, since finding human design and being more in my own process, is that I used to start a whole lot of things incorrectly, you know. So that was one of the things that was very prevalent when I found human design, is that I'd be so enthusiastic and I would just say yes to things and I'd be in them before I even knew it. And then, well, I've got the 29, the gate of saying yes. And so I'd be, yes. A friend of mine said, oh, yeah, when I met you, Christine, you were always, yes, let's do this. And yes, let's try that. And oh, that sounds really interesting. And let's do this. And, you know, over time, I've changed that. So now I'm much more, you know, working with being very clear that something is for me before I start it. And that's reduced this flakiness, or reduced the feeling of obligation, because I used to move between this feeling of, well, now I'm in it, then I must, you know, and I've got to complete it and all of that, which was all complete, you know, that was conditioning. Or that, well, I'm in it and I really don't like it, and so now I'm out of it and now I feel bad, you know. So I moved between those. Yeah, so that doesn't happen to me as much anymore, as it used to. And that is much more relaxing.
Oh, I can feel that too. You mentioned the word correctness, and this is in human design. When people get into this, they jump into a forum or whatever it is. Did you enter this thing correctly? That always gets, and a lot of reflectors go, I don't really know what that means. Does that mean that I've got to wait a lunar cycle before I make this decision? Would you mind sharing your feedback on that? Because I understand what you mean, but I think this is really good coming from you, if you wouldn't mind.
So correctness is aligned with our authority. And so the biggest thing for a reflector to learn is, what does our authority feel like? Because, of course, on the chart it says authority none. Well, that's useful, isn't it? Of course, what I discovered is it doesn't mean that we don't have any authority. It means that there is no one place in our design that is our authority, and that I know what my authority feels like when it arrives, and it's a holistic experience. And so that holistic embodied experience of what it is when I would enter into something truly as my own being correctly, that is correctness. And to do that, we need to learn what that feels like in our body. And the problem with most reflectors is they're trying to work it out in their mind. And it doesn't happen in the mind. The mind is not the authority. The mind is never the authority. And so, yes, it means waiting lunar cycles. It doesn't mean, of course, waiting lunar cycles for what you're going to eat or what you're going to wear or whether you're going to go into town or stay at home or what movie you're going to watch. But it does mean starting to work with lunar movements and really suspending our preferences and waiting as long as we can for any decision. Because at the beginning, there was a time where I couldn't work it out, and so I was doing all sorts of things. But then there was a time where I started to get it. And when I started to get it, I realized, oh, wow, a whole lot of the things I choose are from my conditioning. I think they're my preferences. Are they? And so I started to get quite radical, and I started to wait lunar cycles for as many things as I could to see what would happen. And I found that my preferences changed because they were not true. Some preferences remained, but some didn't. And so I started waiting lunar cycles for as many things as possible. And then once I started to realize what that did, which was basically revolutionize my life. Then I started to realize, there's some things that now I know are truly correct for me. And so I don't need to wait a lunar cycle. I need to wait less time, but I still need to wait a bit because I know what happens now when the moon moves and I know how that moves through me and what my behavior is. And so, therefore, with my lunar cycle, I know what that feels like. So I know then what it feels like when my authority arrives. Because it arrives. I'm not making up my mind about what it is that I choose. And so, I really worked with that as an experiment. And that's the thing for reflectors to get. What does that feel like when it's coming from what is correct for me? And that has got nothing to do with what other people think is correct. And it's got nothing to do with rules. And it's got nothing to do with, you have to do this or you have to do that. It's your being speaking in its full capacity. That's what you're waiting for. And you can only do that through experimentation, and you cannot do it through your mind.
So beautifully said. A part of my experiment has always been as soon as someone asks me to do something now or I have to make a decision, I straight away, I know it's a little heady, but I go into a where is that pressure for me to say yes? Because I'm a yes, an ex-yes girl too. And I even went to the polar opposite and just started saying no to everything.
Yeah,
No, that was,
great.
I just went no.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Dad would be like,
Fantastic.
but I really want to say yes. And I'd think, where's that yes coming from? And I'd literally try and like feel it in the body and go, where is that pressure that I'm feeling to say
Yeah.
yes? Is that the people pleaser? Is that this part? Is that I don't know enough? Oh my gosh, I need to know this gate 48 right there. So I love what you just said then. Thank you for sharing that so beautifully because it's very, very important.
Yeah, well, that's right, because I've heard all sorts of things from reflectors. I've heard reflectors say, oh, you don't need to wait a lunar cycle. No, that lunar cycle is rules. I've heard of people say all sorts of things about lunar cycles and missing the whole point of what it might do for them.
I was talking with someone just a few weeks ago, actually, and it was really enlightening what they said. And they said, sometimes we can think we're entering the experiment. Like when we discover human design, great, we're there. Oh my gosh, we're a reflector. What does all that mean? And we go, oh, But it's probably not until a year or so after you've kind of got yourself out, that's when you truly start your experiment. And I was like, that got me, punched me right in the feels. And I went, that's so accurate when you kind of like embrace the experiment for being what it is, an experiment, and you start to get out of there and must know all these things. So I think that's that first year of, I always joke and say, my first year, I thought I was, like a first year psychology student. I thought I knew everything.
Exactly.
Sorry, psychology students, but I say it in jest. I want to ask you about, obviously when you went through this training and then you thought of bringing it back to, well, you're in New Zealand. At what point did you feel ready to teach it, or were you just navigating and exploring as you went, Christine? Would you mind sharing?
I did my training, and that was about 4.5 years of training. I didn't teach anyone in that time. I was in my experiment. I was learning. I did in that time become a Living Your Design guide, which means I could have taught, but there was something inside of me that knew that I wanted to wait until I could really do it truly as a in integrity with me. I am not into following other people's prescriptions of how things need to be. And I'm a trained
Okay.
facilitator and coach and everything. So I wanted to be able to do it in the way that I knew was more aligned with me. And so I, of course, after I became certified, I started doing readings. That was 2009 that I started doing readings. And then I had people asking me for a few years, will you teach Living Your Design? Will you teach Living Your Design? And then eventually in 2011, I started teaching Living Your Design. So yeah, I mean, I'd been in there 6 years before I really started teaching it to groups. I'd done a lot of readings before I started teaching it to groups. And then I went on and became qualified. I did my teacher certification and started teaching a whole lot of other ranges of, the next levels of, people might not know what those are, but you go beyond the experiment of the body graph and the body, and you go into all the circuitry and all the profiles and everything. So, but I teach those live, and so I taught those live for a few years. And whereas they're taught online in a period of, actually, I can't even remember how long it is online, but what I did is I made it into an experiential journey. And I teach Living Your Design over a period of 4 days. So it's a 4 day immersion so that we can actually work with the body and with the felt experience of the body graph and all of the types and the centers and everything, so that people are not coming, we're not coming at it from the perspective of theory, we're coming at it from the perspective of what the embodied experience is, and then we're adding theory to it rather than the other way around. And I taught ABCs and Rave Cartography, it was sort of like 5 days for one of them and 20 days for the other one, so that we were coming together in community over a period of a year. Little modules of 3 or 4 days where community came together and everyone could experiment with their design. And that was a really alive way of learning it, and people being able to relate to different types and not just have it as a theory in their mind of what that type was, but a living person who they had a relationship with. And that's what I loved doing, and that's what I love doing still.
That's beautiful. I'm coming. I'm flying. I need a holiday. I one of the last, I know we've been going for a while, so I won't keep you too much longer, but I want to ask you about the sixth line journey. I have always, since day dot, when I started looking at the profiles, I had this deep respect for the sixth line, and I've spoken about it a lot of just this constant, well, not a constant, but just the changing of that profile line, or that sixth line. And we don't get to hear a lot of people talk about their experience of coming off the roof. We hear a lot of people in their 30s, I'm going on the roof. It's just like, but that experience of coming off the roof. Would you mind sharing your six line journey?
Coming off the roof. It's quite a big topic. I was really fortunate because I found human design 7 years before I was due to come off the roof. And that's a cellular cycle. And so when I initially read a bit about the whole six line thing, I knew deep inside of me that if I were to come off the roof in the state that I was in when I met human design, I wasn't sure how long I'd be living, put it that way. Because I really knew by then that the way I was living was completely unsustainable for old age. And so I was highly motivated. I'd spent, sort of in the mid on the roof stage, I'd spent some of it not knowing I was a reflector. But I had now 7 years to do it knowing I was a reflector. And so I really prioritized in those 7 years getting healthy and really aligning myself with the lifestyle and the way of being, the way of working, everything that the relationships that would serve my longevity. Because I was pretty scared, actually. I was like, far out, this sounds quite serious. And because my health wasn't that great, I felt like, there's a lot of people who really go into some kind of really ill health, or some people who die early in the early 50s. So by the time I came off the roof, and this is the good news part of the story, is that when I came off the roof, I felt like I was flying off the roof, not falling off the roof. In a way, I had already dissolved everything in my life that didn't belong in support of me by the time I came off the roof. But that meant it was an incredibly intense 7 years because literally so many things in my life just dissolved. I had to change so much, not from a mental place, but just because one by one by one, these decisions all came along and I met them. In a way that meant I needed to change because I was very conditioned. I'd been very successful in business. I'd lived a pretty energetic life. I was very efficient. I was, successful. And none of that was going to allow me to continue in a healthy way. And so it had really all dissolved by then. And so when I came off the roof, it was literally I met life in a whole new way. I met a whole new life. I felt like this is a new life. And it was a thrilling. It was thrilling. It was really thrilling because so many things just fell into my path that were the things that my soul had been yearning for. So many things that I could never have designed. I could never have kind of planned it. It all happened in ways that really lifted me and gave me this whole sense of hope in my life. And I did meet some real health challenges as well, because you can't live for 50 years and do to my body what I'd done to my body and still come to 50 without some health challenges. However, I met those challenges and was able to heal myself and be feeling really good in my body and have great health now, all these years later. And so I'd look at my health when I was 43, and I know that my health now is so much better. I'm in a so much better state than I was when I was 43. And there's been a quite a passage of time between.
I love that. Thank you for sharing that. It's so inspirational to, to know that you can change your life. You can course correct and empower yourself.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Lastly, before we add up, just quickly, what would you like to share with this little community of ours? A little reflector community. Is there any pearls? I've been told not to say pearls of wisdom. Something you'd like to share, if you don't have to, if you may.
Yeah, so what would I say to reflectors? I would say that it's actually a privilege to be a reflector, and that it often doesn't feel like a privilege when we're operating in ways that are not supportive of our lives. And I would say that there is some incredible wisdom that is, it goes against what society is asking for us. And so the more that we can just forget about all of that and go with what we need, the more that we can be healthy. And we need healthy reflectors in the world because it's such an important job that we have to uplift humanity. And so, yeah, do whatever needs to be done to be healthy.
Thank you so much for gifting me your time, for us your time, Christine. It's been an honor to sit in space with you, to share your energy again. Appreciate you very much.
Thanks for everything you're doing out there in the world for reflectors, Annie.